Aloha and welcome to part two of episode 9 of Feathers and Fire, HPR's Chief of War After Show podcast. I assume you've listened to part one, and thank you for that. And thank you for joining us for this additional content. I'm Russell Subiono.
Aloha mai, and I'm Mehana Makainai.
All right, we have a guest today, and I'm very excited to be able to talk to him, not only because he plays such an important character, but there's probably no local actor more deserving of a role like this today. He plays Chief Keaomoku in Chief of War, but you've also seen him in roles in Rescue High Surf and NCIS Hawaii, as well as in several local short films.
He's also written several plays performed locally. Lovey Lee was staged at Kumukahua Theater last year, but he's probably best known for his one-man show about legendary surfer and Olympian Duke Kahanamoku. Please welcome to the podcast, Moses Goods.
Yes, sir.
Aloha, my kakou.
Aloha.
All right. Moses, knowing the path that you've walked as a local actor and writer, what does it feel like to have a major role with your name in the opening credits on a prestige TV show on a major platform in a series depicting Hawaii history?
Two parts to that question for me. One, I've been doing this type of work for about 30 years now. And I started in a time when nobody was doing this type of work. And what I mean by this type of work is telling our mo'olelo, telling our stories and, you know, being represented either on stage or on screen. I made a commitment to do this type of work. One, to change the landscape of things and make, you know, change the reality of me being the only, you know, Kanaka representing, you know, people, our people, but also to get ready for when something of this caliber came into play, right? And so I'm like, all right, it's going to happen eventually. So I got to be Makaukau because we got to get some Kanaka in there. So really 30 years ago, I started to get ready for, you know, an opportunity like this. When you mentioned specifically seeing my name on the opening credits, I have to share that I get emotional sometimes because I have my father's name, which is also my grandfather's name, which is also my great grandfather's name. So I'm the fourth Moses Goods. And I see that on screen and I see my, you know, I see my kupuna on my dad's side. Yeah. So it's just a very personal and emotional thing, just specifically seeing my name on the credits. It's not my name, it's our name.
What was your first day on set like in wardrobe? Being in a setting that looked like ancient Hawaii, what kind of emotions did that evoke in you?
Fortunately, the first day I was on set was in Kalapana. So we filmed for me about a month in Hawaii before we went to Aotearoa. And so that right there was, you know, I couldn't have asked for a better start. You know, we're actually on our, you know, our aina shooting this thing. And for me, the preparation that went into this whole thing, I went back home to Maui. I went to Hamoa, where my family is from. My iwi kupuna is buried right there in the hills of Hamoa. I went to connect with kupuna over there just to make sure that I'm ready. I got my my pio at Kione Nunes, do my pio on my side and my lower back specifically to get makaukau for this. So I did a lot of preparation physically, spiritually, mentally, emotionally. So getting there, it's like, oh, all of it, it was like a culmination of all of those things just kind of coming together. So that was the first day for me.
I love that you said you've been ho'omakaukau preparing for this role your entire life, your entire career in acting, because you knew it was going to happen. You knew it was inevitable. So now that it has happened, what do you hope viewers are going to take away from this series? What is their kuleana now?
It's changing the way people are seeing Hawaii, you know, for both people that live in Hawaii and people that live away. It's reframing their mindset of what we are, who we are as a people, right? It's not, it's changing the whole tourist idea, tourist destination, that kind of thing. And they see that we have an incredibly powerful and deep culture and language. And it's kind of giving people a hunger to learn more about it in a way that just, you know, is the best possible scenario, that people are watching this and wanting to learn more. So what I'm hoping they will do is what I know they'll do. They'll continue to, you know, to follow that i'ini, to learn more, to, you know, understand the actual Hawaii, not what was packaged for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And hopefully those tourists learn to act right, because we fierce people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. What we can do. You see all that bloodshed on the...
Don't make us bring that out.
That's right. That's what we'll do. If you...
Keaomoku is not the first legendary historical figure that you've played. You also wrote a one-man show about Duke Kahanamoku. How do you prepare to play a historical character in general? And how did you prepare specifically for Keaomoku?
Okay, I've been doing this for a long time. Yeah. So I've played many actual kupuna, people that still exist. They have existed and they still exist in other ways, in the physical way. So I start off, first of all, making sure that it's okay for me to tell that story, because it may not be my story to tell. Mm-hmm. So I connect with, one, the kupuna themselves, and that can happen in different ways. You just spend time in the right space and just connect with them in different ways, right? Spiritually, mentally, whatever that may be, through pule, through chant, through just being in a space that's connected to them. So I connect with them, if possible. I also connect with, if possible, their descendants, to make sure that, okay, again, is this a story that I should be telling? That's something I try to do when taking on these characters. It's not always possible, but I do my best just to make sure that I'm good, that I'm going on this journey fully understanding that this is someone who existed and, like I said, still continues to exist. So with Keaomoku, it's interesting because in Chief of War, a lot of these chiefs are Maui chiefs or descend from Maui or connect to Maui. And that's where I descend from, right? I'm connected to Pi'ilani, which is, a famous chief of Maui, which a lot of Ali'i descend from. Many of them in the show, represented in the show, except for the one that I'm portraying. Keaomoku does not descend from Pi'ilani. Mm-hmm. However, he does marry into Pi'ilani line, because Namahana and Soka'ahumanu is also Pi'ilani. So surrounded by all these Pi'ilani chiefs, except for the one that I'm portraying, which meant that I had to find my own way to connect with him, or rather open myself up in a way that would allow him to connect with me when he wants to, right? So I shared this story many times already, but I'll share it with you guys. It was a very gripping connection that I made with him. It was at a costume fitting for the show when I put on the replica of the Ahu'ula that he wore. The name of his Ahu'ula is Eheukani, and it was a very unique Ahu'ula. The design, all yellow except for the red part at the shoulders and this black circle right in the middle of the back. So you can see that in my character. It's seen a lot in the show. And I put that on in the costume fitting. And then I left the fitting and I went downstairs. I took the elevator downstairs and the elevator opened up. I took one step out and my spine froze up in the spot where that black circle was. Whoa. And it's the kind of feeling you get was like, your next step is very important because you could throw your back out, right? So that was actually Keaomoku. And I went home to Maui and I connected with a kupuna over there to share this story. But that was basically him taking hold of my spine. And we talked about him being a fierce warrior, meaning he was efficient in killing. He's saying to me, okay, I have your spine. I could easily snap it, or I could kako'o you. The choice is yours. All you have to do is remember who this is about. Not me. It's about this kupuna that I'm portraying. It's about this mo'olelo. So I took a deep breath. I took my first step, and I was good, and I've been walking ever since. So as long as I stay focused on what I'm supposed to be doing, I'm good. These kupuna literally will have my back, right? Yeah. But it's when you veer away from that, then you get pirikia, right? So my job is just to focus on the story, focus on the kupuna, and good.
Yeah. Awesome. Our kupuna, you mentioned them, they're incredible, right? Their stories are just magnificent, and the things that they were able to achieve and their stewardship over land and resources. We can go on and on about how wonderful and what they created for us. They were also storytellers, right? Like fabulous storytellers. And so my question to you is, with Chief of War, Jason and Pa'a, they took a lot of liberties with the story and kind of doing different things and bringing in characters that maybe weren't together in scenes, but making it work. How do you think that works in this modern day of telling stories, maybe not being so connected to what historically happened, but still honoring and promoting a version or like a more elaborate way of telling stories. What do you think about this?
Okay, it is a different type of storytelling that we're doing right now. It is not hula. It is not a traditional type of storytelling, and it's going to be different than what hula is. But I think one thing to remember, even in hula, you'll take a story and you will embellish it, and you will not necessarily change it, but you will add to it. You add all this beautiful, you know, imagery and artistic, you know, way of thinking. So we kind of already do that, mm-hmm. right? And it's okay within the hula realm. This is something different that, of course, the artistic license is a different thing today when people really change the story. But I got to remind people that we have these stories. These are our stories. These stories are a part of us. They're never going to be taken away. We're never going to lose the story. So if we see it on screen and it's slightly different, we still have the story. We still know the story. You know, so it's a matter of, you know, reaching a place of security as a people. We're very secure about who we are as Kanaka and what we have, right? And get away from the insecurity of thinking that we're going to lose these things, which I understand because we've had things taken mm-hmm. from us, mm-hmm. right? We've had our culture, you know, nearly stripped away and, you know, and commodified and all of that. I think we're at a place now where we are very secure in who we are as Kanaka, and we can look at a show like this and be like, okay, they made a change there. And then what's happening is what I love. When those changes are made in this particular show, there's conversation now mm-hmm. within the Lahui, healthy conversation. Yep. Even if it's something like, whoa, okay, well, let's talk about it. Let's not, you know, try to tear the show down. Yep. It is not a perfect show by any means, and it needs to be talked about. And it's getting me excited that people are having these conversations about issues that they might have with the show and still enjoying the show for what it is, but coming together as, you know, as Kanaka, as a Lahui, like, oh, let's talk this out. Let's see. Why do you think they made that decision? Mm-hmm. I would have made this decision, but we still enjoy the show.
Yes. Oh, kako.
Yeah. Yeah, and we do enjoy the show. We always have questions about certain things here and there, but overall, we enjoy the show. So I'm glad that we have this opportunity to present this story to the world. One of the big themes that we talk about in the podcast is this idea that Olelo Hawaii is so prominently featured. From your perspective, were there any changes made to how Olelo was spoken in the show?
No. Okay. If anything, they went the other direction, right? Even the Olelo that was used, like for me, being a conversational speaker, not you know, completely fluent, the type of Olelo that was used is almost like a heightened Olelo. So some of it, I'm like, wow, I have to like really, you know, try to make sure I know what I'm saying, because it's not just a casual way of speaking. It's like a very like, what's the word for it? Heightened is the best word I can come up with. So they actually, when we were speaking Olelo, we went all in. So they didn't, you know, water it down by any means.
We also noticed some variation in some of the dialects or some of the speech patterns, like Keo'ua, we noticed spoke with a lot of T's. Mm-hmm. Was there a philosophy behind how each character was able to kind of put their own spin on the way that Olelo was spoken?
Those of us that have, you know, a background, we sort of pulled from our own background. Those who didn't, of course, had to rely on their coaches, and there were different coaches. So I think the different coaches had different thoughts about how they wanted to coach their actors and also what dialect they wanted to use for the specific character.
I thought it was cool.
Yeah, I loved it. I mean, when you think about it, our islands, they might seem so close, but really, if you're traveling by foot and by va'a, mm-hmm. these are big distances and dialect differences were common. Yeah. And so even if it was kind of a natural, organic process, it was good for the show.
Yeah. I liked it. Like a'ole and a'ale, right? It's like two different ways of saying the same word, and depending on where you are. Yeah.
What do you think was your most challenging part of being in Chief of War or playing Ke'eomoku?
The cold. The cold of New Zealand. People don't realize New Zealand is, yes, it's you know, there are our Polynesian cousins, but in a different part of the world, and it gets like freezing cold there.
I agree with you. Yeah. I studied abroad in New Zealand when I was in my bachelor's, and we lived in Otago, Dunedin, like next stop Antarctica.
Oh.
And I remember when we got off the plane, I was like, these people can't be Polynesian.
Yeah.
It's so cold.
So the joke is like, you know, that's why, you know, Maoris are so like, because they have to build up that energy to survive in their
the
climate.
Heat within.
Yeah. So the cold was a huge challenge for me. And try being in a malo and pretending like you're in, you know, Hawaii sun. Yeah. So that was a huge challenge.
Good thing you always had to be so stern, right? Maybe yeah. it made it okay.
So tense.
In this series, we see Keaomoku as someone who is loyal and subservient to the kingdom, is a capable warrior, has a mind for strategy, doesn't jump to conclusions, but is also ready to take quick action. What does he do to relax?
Oh.
Like, what are his hobbies? Like, we never get to see the fun side or the non-business side of Keaomoku.
There's one scene. It is the beginning of episode 4 when I come back and it's when the Kukini is bringing word that Kalaniopuu has died, and I'm coming down, and I have no mahiʻole, no ahuʻula, one of only two scenes where I'm not wearing the regalia, and then I have two of my guys. One is carrying a pig, so we just and I got you know blood smeared over. It's a quick scene, but that's the one moment where you sort of see me out of like that mode,
yeah.
You know, just like going out and just like hunting pig. Another scene is like sort of the quick scene. When Kaʻahumanu brings me news that Kaʻiana wants to speak with me about the guns, and I'm eating, so out of the regalia. Those are the only two moments where I don't have the ahuʻula and mahiʻole. But yeah, he is a person that has lived nearly his entire life getting ready for this one moment.
Yeah.
He saw the Hoʻailona when Kamehameha was a baby, and it's like, okay, I don't really control my life anymore. It is controlled by what needs to be done by this, you know, this prophecy that I know will be fulfilled. So I think there's only a few moments when he actually is able to be a human and just kind of relax. Another thing, and this is just something that I've, you know, myself and Luciani Buchanan, who plays Kaʻahumanu, you know, we have had many conversations about our characters and our relationship with each other. To me, that when he's in those rare moments when he was actually with his ohana, because they were on Maui and he was on Hawaii Island, when he was actually able to be with his wahine and his daughter, was another time as like, I can be a human being. I can be a loving father. You know, I can put that aside and just like go to my family. Because she comes up to him and she embraces him in that first scene in episode 2,
mm-hmm.
like a daughter embracing a father. Not, you know, two ali'i coming together. It's like, oh, my makua. So that's another time when I'm like able to like just shed everything and just be a father. Unfortunately, I'm there to bring my daughter into my political scheming. But, you know, when I can, it's like that's, you know, I get to release when I'm with those particular people, my ohana, my close ohana.
One of my favorite ways Keaomoku is portrayed in Chief of War is his reactions towards the Iliaina, you know, the Ilikea. And I love how you're always like, get back on your boat.
Yes.
We'll deal with you later. And what do you think about this, knowing about what happens with Hawaii and our history and sometimes exploitation that took place with Europeans? Do you think this is a really strong statement that Chief of War is trying to make with Keaomoku and his kind of, you know, lack of trust and wanting to be very reserved with these newcomers?
Yeah, I think Keaomoku, knowing that the prophecy needs to be fulfilled and knowing, sort of seeing the entire game, if you will, the whole game board, the konane board, right? He sees all the possible moves and the possible threats, and this is a huge threat. And we basically have to get things in order before that threat comes in. Mm-hmm. So absolutely, he has that foresight and like, okay, they know about guns. They know about what Westerners can do. And he's like, okay, we got to keep that at bay for a little bit longer until we can, you know, get Makaukau for that. I think also in the writing, you know, I think also they wanted to portray, you know, Hawaiians as the ones that, okay, yeah, we're front and center, mm-hmm. you know, so that's an artistic choice that was made. And it's like, okay, you know, we're not going to have the Ilikea be the stars of the show, if you will, right? And I think that is a definite conscious decision that was made by the writers. And it's one that, you know, to a degree I do appreciate, but at the same time, one of those Ilikea, I don't want to say too much about the show, but this is my opinion, John Young, like,
he's like one of the ones that we love.
Right. Yeah, right. Like, right. I wish, you know, because one of my favorite lines is, you know, go, okay, John Young, right? And everybody loves that line.
Yep.
And it was fun to deliver, and it's fun being, you know, the Kanaka saying that to a Ilikea. But at the same time, it's like, but John Young is actually one that, you know, that we as Kanaka, we love him, right? We made him ali'i. And also the actor playing John Young is like just one of my favorite human beings. Yeah, mm-hmm. Benjamin is just such a good person and good actor. But anyway, yes, to answer your question, yeah. I think.
We thought the portrayal of the relationship between the Ilikea and between the Kanaka and the Chiefs was wonderful. I mean, you're so used to the dialogue being about Captain Cook, and he came in and he was in charge and he was running things. And mm-hmm. Chief of War totally flipped that. Yeah. And I believe in a more truthful way where the civilized people, the sophisticated people are the Kanaka. Mm-hmm. And these guys who are kind of dirty and suffering from scurvy are these European explorers, you know, and they want to exploit and abuse resources. And the Kanaka are very hospitable in certain respects, but also wary of protecting themselves. So mm-hmm. Russell and I have talked about it before, and we were like, it's fabulous to finally see the story told from this point of view.
Yep, from a Kanaka perspective, from our point of view. And it was a conscious thing done by the writers because we have Kanaka in the writer's room, right? Yeah, so it was a plan. It was planned to tell the story from that perspective, absolutely.
Right on.
In the course of filming and in the course of what seems to have become like a family of all the actors and all of the creatives on the set, do you have like a fun story or favorite story from your time filming Chief of War?
Okay. Anytime.
Not in the cold.
Not in the cold. Yeah, right. Not in the cold.
Hot tub afterward.
Anytime me and Luciane are on set together, it's a riot. She's actually one of my best friends. I love her. And we, you know, we play father and daughter on screen, but off screen we're two like really good friends and silly friends who laugh at everything and throw Kaina into the mix as well. So the three of us were trouble. Like they had to hold so much, you know, hold the shot so many times.
They had to separate you guys.
Yeah, because we were just cracking up like and we couldn't stop because we just, you know, we love being around each other because we spent so much time together delving into this story, you know, and in a personal way, just spending time with each other. So we're on set. Yes, we get the work done when it's time. You know, we turn it on when it needs to be turned on. But there are moments we have where we're just like, just laughing, just enjoying the experience, but also just enjoying each other. You know, that's that. To me, that makes the relationships on screen even stronger when you actually have, you know, a deep connection with the people you're working with. So I'm trying to think of a specific story, but I think there are just so many stories when we're just like enjoying being in the moment and being there together and just laughing. One might come up to me. I'll see if I can think of any specific moment.
You know, one of the things I've thought about is we've talked so much about Chief of War and we've had a really good time doing that, Russell and myself. And what you said, we've been trying to dive deeper and ask more questions and get into storylines. And it's been wonderful to be able to do. One of the things that I thought about is if you could bring another character from Hawaiian history into Chief of War, is there anyone that you would have loved to have included as well? So like for me, it is Ke Kuhaupio. Mm-hmm. I understand why he wasn't included because he's like this magnanimous character maybe. But like I was like, man, Ke Kuhaupio, Ke Aumoku were so important in Kamehameha unifying Hawaii Island. And no more Ke Kuhaupio. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that is one that a lot of Hawaiians, a lot of people that know the history are like, you're kidding me. So he didn't make the cut. And I too, that's one kupuna that I think, you know, I would love to have seen in the show. And, you know, hopefully if there is a season two, you never know what the writers might do. But aside from him, Keopuolani. Keopuolani, like divinity on earth.
And good choice because it would add another strong female character to the mix.
And I love that. You know, I believe that my character, the Keomoku, understands what Wahine can do. This is my take on the whole thing. He knows that he's not able to do what Kaahumanu can do. And in fact, they brought her up to be that type of person. He married Namahana. Namahana herself was a trailblazer in terms of doing things that Wahine weren't supposed to do, right? So he marries this powerful, very headstrong Wahine. They create a force of nature, they gave her the name Kahumanu, which is part of Kahikili's name, Kahikili Nui Ahumanu. So they gave her the inoa of this badass chief. So to me, that's like them knowing that, okay, Wahine are powerful. And in fact, they're the ones that we need to look to right now in this time of change, because it really is not about war in the physical sense, right? It is about war navigating this new world, which is something that him, being an old school thinker, is not completely capable of. So he's got to bring Kahumanu into the game, because she can do what he can't do. And then thing is, she really does it. And he's like, oh my God, you're doing too much. And at a certain point, he's like, okay, well, I messed that one up.
Yeah. Yeah. Even at the end, right, when Kahumanu is picking Kayana off the lava at the end of the battle, right? Even that eye is like, oh.
What did I create? Yeah. What did I do?
Yeah. And with your Kyopuleni inclusion, we could also add the scene where Kamehameha is crawling to her. Good. Because, you know, Russell, he was below her and no one was above the couple system. So when he wanted to sleep with this companion, he crawled to her. And if that ain't Mana Wahine, I don't know what is.
He slithered naked to her.
Wow.
It was like she had that much mana. Mm-hmm. Like this was really divinity on earth. And so to have her come into the story and then the relationship between her and Kahumanu and how that is like, so it's like, oh my God, what are you going to do at that point? The Wahine have taken control and have changed the world.
That's probably why they didn't bring her in. They didn't want that to happen so early.
Season two. They got to have her in season two. Come on.
Man, Moses, thanks so much for your time. Thank you for coming into the station. Thank you for talking story with us.
Yeah, mahalo nui for having me. And this has been a wonderful conversation. And yes, we took it in a bunch of different directions, which I love. You know, having been able to talk about these things and voice them publicly. So I enjoyed this conversation. So mahalo for having me.
Awesome. Mahalo nui. And we look forward to seeing you in season two.
Yes.
We hope.
Fingers crossed. Thank you for listening to part two of episode 9 of Feathers and Fire. Don't forget, we have one more episode for you left. It's our post-season wrap-up and our interview with Kupuohi, or the actress that plays Kupuohi, Te Ao Ohina Pihenga. She talks about her character, the prominent Hawaiian activist that she modeled Kupuohi after, and some behind-the-scenes hijinks on set. You can download it next week, Saturday, September 27th. Until then, aloha and mahalo for listening.